This is Talk of Asian Marketing with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior. Our website is ccc.qbook.tv, where you can find other audio and video episodes with photos, links, and information related to today's conversation. Subscribe to leave comments and access research episodes with applied topics and research reports. Here we are, Talk of Asian Marketing. I'm Clyde Warden, and we're here today with James Stanworth. How are you doing, James?
I'm great, Clyde. Really, as usual, excited that we're on our podcast stream, and, well, we're talking about moving today and jumping on our scooters, and anyone that's ever lived in the Far East has to have a scooter, otherwise you're just not cool. So I know you've got a bigger capacity scooter. And one of the key delights of having a scooter is getting it and taking care of it. So that's going to be something that we're going to talk about today, the whole world of scooter stores. And I'm sure you've had your fair share of experience of those, the good and the bad, Clyde.
Well, we actually have a whole show about scooters and repair shops. And that was, I think, show number 3, way back at the beginning. So if anybody's interested to see some of those basics, you can go back to show number 3, which is a podcast. Today we're going to be doing a podcast. We're taking a break from our video. But the reason we have this show is a special one, and that is, James, I know you've been working on a case study about a specific vendor, a specific business, and I think we should share that and look at that a little bit in detail. One thing to keep in mind is that today's show has a research show that goes with it. And if you want to see that research show, you need to join up to the webpage. Up top, there's a little menu that says research. If you don't see that menu, then you're not signed in. Sign in, and you'll get a lot more podcasts, some more video, and some more documents. And in fact, James, I think we're going to have your case study over there with some interesting teaching notes even.
That's right, Clyde. I'm going to upload the case study I've been working on, and that case is about a small store called Derlai. And let me just take a moment to introduce the store, because it was kind of interesting how I came to see it. I was literally, when I go up to work in Zhanghua, I whiz up on the train, jump off on the train, and then I got a small scooter just parked near the train station, like a just a cheapo that I can move from the station to my school. And I was jumping on that, I was going up, and I realized that the oil needed changing, a couple of light fixing. And I was going up the main freeway, one of the main roads in Zhanghua, and looked across and saw, okay, there's a bundle of scooter stores. Let me just stop and get my my bike fixed. And as you know here, you usually see a whole lot of the same, whether it's like 5 scooter stores together, 5 copy shops together, 5 convenience stores together. You know, these things all tend to come together. So I was kind of looking and trying to figure out which was going to be the one to go for. And as I slowed down, I happened to stop by one that was looking pretty bright, pretty clean. And just as I came to a stop, one of the service engineers came right up to me and asked me straight on the spot what I needed. And I said I needed the oil doing and some lights fixing up and just a general check. And we were right in there. He had the scooter up on its stand, some grips put on. They put these sort of plastic covers on the handles, on the seat, just so it doesn't get oily and don't mess up your clothes. And he went through an inspection, and he suggested I should change the tires. He said he'd change the oil. We checked which kind of oil should be put in there, because they've got a whole raft of oils, some of which I knew, some of which I didn't know. So we went through different types of oil, chose the oil. Then he told me to change the lights. And we had a look at talked about the shock absorbers at the front, because they were going. I just wanted to know if he could change them and give me a quote on doing that. And then I directed me to a seat. There was a nice little seating area. I could sit down, have a glass of water, which, you know, we're in the tropics, that's kind of pleasant. Newspapers, all these other nice things sat there. So it's kind of comfortable. You can sit there, you can watch the guys working on your scooter. And then wrapped up, he had a bill, itemized, a little bit unusual again, and paid my stuff, and I thought, well, I was done. But no, he took the scooter right out to the road. He asked me which way I was going, so I said, I'm going left. He got the scooter orientated for that start. He waited till I was on and waved me goodbye. I thought, well, come on, this must be because I'm a foreigner. And so we carried on like that, and I went up to meet some students in my university, and I said to them, right off, guys, you need to go and get your scooter serviced, and I want to hear the stories.
Oh, so you sent them to go get their scooters worked on, and you want to hear the stories, see how they align with your story.
Exactly, dead on. And so, you know, a couple of days later, I say, what's happened? And they told me very similar things. It's interesting because scooter stores typically are a little bit dark, a little bit oily. You've got parts all over the place, tools sort of in a mishmash heap. And it's all a little bit happy-go-lucky kind of experience. Drew me right into saying, well, what's going on here? You know, why is it different, that typical kind of format? And I thought, well, there's something interesting here because the prices are not particularly cheap and, in fact, are higher than the competition, but yet they're very busy. So that kind of thing often makes you ask those questions, doesn't it, Clyde? You see something that looks a little bit unusual, and then you start to pursue it. It's different here. Why is this happening in this kind of way? It's the genesis of a case study.
Interesting. Yeah, well, the typical shop, certainly in the last 10 years, is very different from your explanation. And even today, most of the shops, you drop in, they do a job for you, turn you around. In fact, if you look at show number 3, I think, you can see some of those characteristics. And later I want to talk about the shop that's in show number 3 that I have some consumer cam underwent a major shift just in the direction you're talking about, James. But let's stick with this case study. So this case study is very interesting. It kind of gives an outline. You do talk in the case study about going in there and stopping and getting a motorcycle worked on. Why don't you go through the case with us?
Well, as you say, Clyde, it's anything to depart from what's the norm. And we talked about a lot of that in our show 3, and you can see a lot of those great pictures in there. I think we've got really nice ones of those oily rags and greasy floors and so on that you often find. But, yeah, general shift to upgrade. And it's an interesting business, Durlai, but, you know, like a lot of businesses over here, it's a business. It started with the chief founder, Zhang, and he watched, in fact, younger brother start up a scooter store. And that's still a very typical kind of format, small store. And he watched younger brother getting on with it, and he kind of thought, well, I can do the same. And it basically went there. Rather than just opening a store, he saw the opportunity for a few years to become a franchise for Yamaha. And Yamaha were pushing on the whole idea of developing a certain format. And so he bought into the idea of doing the cleaner, better format with a certain floor plan layout. And on top of that, it enabled him then to become franchisee selling our products to local distributors.
So it started out as your basic family store, and then from there they're going to join up with Yamaha. James, you're breaking up a little bit. Maybe I can I dial you right back?
Yeah.
It's a no Skype problem. It's almost every sentence breaking up. Let me dial you right back. Hold on. Okay, we're going to call James back here.
Hi, Clyde.
Okay, I hope that's a better connection. So starts out as a family store, then they're going to move into being a franchise with Yamaha. And were the requirements attached to that?
Yeah, the requirements were a little bit aggressive because they were after a certain amount of money in the bank. They were after about 10 million Taiwanese dollars capital. And they also insisted that the store was upgraded to what they call a Yamaha Super Plaza. And so that meant investing in some amount of equipment that they wouldn't have had otherwise, and also going through the Yamaha inspection on product, service, and availability.
Interesting. And so that's no small amount of money. You're talking about almost $300,000 in the bank, or they just need to know your business is capitalized that much?
Yeah, it's a combination of capitalized and asset availability. You don't have to have that kind of money in the bank.
Okay. So you need to have something started and established already.
That's right. Yes. Or someone flying in as an angel, I guess.
And buying all the stuff for you, and you're ready to go.
Yes, exactly. So for them, it was a natural kind of next step to upgrade a little bit, and also that they could start to get the ability to act as a sales franchise for the other local distributors. Now, what I guess that actually the main benefit was that facilitated him to build a network into the local Jianghua community of retailers and resellers, and that created positive reach for him and his business in all sorts of other spheres. As we both know, Clyde, that sometimes the Guanxi, the relationship spin-off, is not always related to the actual business you're doing, but you're looking for all sorts of other business favors and more personal favors that come through building a network. So this franchise opportunity to become a supplier had the additional and important benefit of enabling him to extend his relationship reach right through a much bigger community.
So that's a good point. I've seen that a lot too. It's joining these organizations or being a member of a franchise, being a franchisee, is often not just about the business. In fact, I've heard complaints that the revenue may go up, but their profit actually gets hit, but they get many other opportunities.
Exactly. And the margin, I mean, I don't include the details on the margin, but the margin on resale of new bikes is actually pretty slim. So although, you know, he's pushing out around 100 bikes a month, which when you think about it is actually quite a lot, at an average of, say, around $50,000, that's quite a lot of business that's moving. But the profit from it is not enormous.
Yeah, so about $1,000 to $2,000 US dollars per motorcycle. They have a wide range in price, but I've heard that too. The profit margin is very small on those.
It is kind of slim. So the other part of the business is service, servicing, oil change, repairs. They also offer scooter towback, so if you've broken down, they'll bring the scooter in. If your repair's a bit more substantial, then they'll offer you a free scooter.
A loaner.
A loaner scooter. If you've smashed it up, they'll help you to take the photos if it's a write-off. There's a whole raft. The other one that's kind of interesting, I'm sure you probably make use of this as well, Clyde, is kind of typical of these small scooter stores. They help you get the insurance and do the
inspection,
emissions check, yes, that kind of thing. So there's a whole raft, which I talk about in the case, of these small service offers that are included within their main business. Now, who runs it? Well, Dad's a little older. He's in his 60s, so he's handed over the day-to-day management of the store to his son. And again, very normal thing. Who looks after the money? Well, not the son, but the son's wife. So who wears the trousers where the money's concerned? Well, it's the wife. And that is really such a typical thing that we find in
So that would be
Chinese
the daughter-in-law
business.
Then?
Yeah, his daughter-in-law, mm-hmm. Yes. The founder's daughter-in-law is running the finances.
There's so many shops like this. It seems like every motorcycle shop I go to almost is this way.
Exactly. And then, so who will pay the mechanics? It'll be the wife. When there's some sort of expenditure needed, wife will get the money and sort of have oversight of it. So very, very normal. And when you even look at slightly larger businesses, and we're talking maybe 15, 20 million US dollars kind of scale, this sort of principle can still be there. I know businesses here in the electronics sector where that have 60, 80 employees, but they're turning over a lot of money, as I say, 10, 15, 20 million US dollars. And who's paying the bills? Who's paying the salaries? Who's basically looking after the finances? It's the wife. But ultimately, you know, the Chinese are smart, aren't they?
Sounds familiar. Sounds very familiar.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking, hey, you know, my wife looks after my poultry income, so. But that principle is based, of course, around who can you trust.
Yeah. Well, and of course, your wife is verified. She's told me this before, and she's also mentioned that the income is so small, it's almost not worth her effort.
Oh, Clyde, don't kill me on these Far Eastern salaries.
But yeah, I think it's so typical, and that's really interesting. So how did you find this out? Did you talk to them about that when you were there and this came up?
Yeah, of course. What we were looking to do was get right in close to the way the store worked. So This is something, of course, that we're going to talk about as we come into our research show. We'll talk a little bit about how we got in close and we got some of this data.
Yeah,
of
course, we'll do the detail on how you got the detail for the research show. So if you're interested in that, we'll do that on the research show. So tell us a little bit more about the shop, James. This is quite interesting to me.
Yeah, then the interesting thing, of course, is when they open up. So they open from 8:30 to 9 o'clock, and that's Monday to Fridays. And then weekends, they're open 8:30 till 8. But, of course, those hours are pretty flexible, and if customers are showing up at 9:30, then they're still getting service. So that's a pretty long day. And as we see, a lot of stores around here, people are used to a kind of a 10, 11-hour day in the business, serving customer, and with the same amount of passion. And for sure, if you turn up at 9 o'clock, 9:30, then they're not going to turn you away. So this is, again, typical of businesses out here. What I talk about in the case is this customer that goes to have her oil changed, and they go through that same kind of experience as I talked about right at the beginning when we opened the show. And what we uncover is that there's a very clear service process. They've got the service outlined in a whole series of steps. So the mechanic knows step one is to greet the customer, diagnose the problem, and so on. And it proceduralizes the whole process right down to the last step, which is saying a polite goodbye to the customer. So their success in making the service consistent isn't an accident. It is something that's very planned and organized.
And how much of that comes from Yamaha, and how much is that developed in the store?
Well, that's a great point, Clive, because, of course, that relationship with Yamaha. Yamaha have given them part of the service process, and I think they probably helped them to start on that thought process about trying to make service a little smoother by proceduralizing it, by having a standard operating procedure. And they've actually taken what Yamaha gave them and they've added a few steps themselves, which I guess localizes it, makes it a little bit more personal, and is something they can work with. But yes, it's very consistent, so they've clearly been fairly careful to implement it. And when we look in the case, because, of course, I like it, some of my students like it, but maybe some of my students like it because they want to please me, which, of course, is a great Chinese trait. So we went to talk to a few customers too, and that's exactly one of the things that customers talk about, that this a process of giving service, diagnosing the problem, systematically making a note of the problem, showing what's being done and so on, all these things give that real feeling of technical competence, of sophistication, and it's something that customers, when they were interviewed, came back and said that they like. And that's what's actually starting to bring them back to the store. The fact that they feel their scooter's taken care of properly, that these are people that know what they're doing, that they use proper respected parts and equipment, that they have good oil, and that their service staff are polite, courteous, attentive, professional. These are all things that customers really appreciate when they go to the store.
Yeah, and that's the way your case is written up. I like the way you wrote that up. It's from a specific customer's perspective about the things she experiences as she goes through the store.
Yeah, which is nice. I remember at when I went to the store, and as you walk in on the left-hand side, they've got all these exciting-looking lights, you know, and, of course, lots of folks really like to customize their scooters up with these blue flashing lights and other things. But they also got the practical things as well that customers need, like helmets, because with the law cracking down on people riding without helmets, then they've got a nice range of helmets there. They come in at just the right price point. But without a helmet, it's a $500 fine. So typically the helmets are just under that. You know,
isn't that great? I mean, aren't free markets amazing? The fine for not having a helmet is $500. So the typical price of a helmet is $495, right?
That's it. And they're right there, you know, they're right prominent in the store. These guys really,
you know, the police could make quite a killing on that. They just carried helmets in their trunks. Your choice is get a ticket or buy a helmet. But yeah, these shops, they always have the helmets there. I think do you have any feeling about what the you know, how much money they're making on that kind of stuff? Because they must be very cheap to buy wholesale.
Yes, I didn't on the margin side. That's obviously a little bit more sensitive, but probably on the oils, I think they're probably just into double digits. Mm. But on these kind of things, it's probably a bigger margin, to be honest. So clearly, this is what becomes interesting in the case, that you've got two things coming together very nicely here. On one side, you've got the customers saying they're willing to pay a little bit more for service. So we've got customers that are coming back because they like their customer experience there. And people are going to the store for 10, 15 years. They really like the fact that they get this competence, this feeling of friendliness, the feeling of a welcome when they go to the store. But then on the other side, what have we got? We've got something that's interesting here, because as we were talking about, where do they make money? Well, typical to most auto businesses these days, you make money on the service side. So what do they want? They want customers to come back, spend a little bit more time in the store, buy a few accessories, experience the service, pay a little bit more for their service, and that's what they're very successful at doing. They are a little bit more expensive, but they get the return customers who are paying that premium for this kind of experience. So it's a really nice kind of win-win proposition, where they're leveraging their good service to make a bigger dollar.
Now, in this case, James, looking at a couple of the pictures, I think the pictures really make the image clear. On the first picture, we have the Dolai store, and of course, it's the Yamaha logo up there and all. Now, the family's opened a second store, right?
They've opened a second store, yes, which I talk about in the case. That's interesting too, because it's about three doors up from the original Dolai, and in this other store, they've got some higher capacity bikes. They sell some secondhand bikes. They sell some other non-Yamaha bikes as well there. And they also, with some of the higher capacity bikes, they draw in a crowd of guys who like racing, who are a little bit more into the whole motor racing space. So they've got another niche there that they service through this other store.
And it's
Plus,
really
of course,
that close. So that's, and when I read the case, I was surprised they were that nearby.
But the reason it works is because they've just hit the niche market, which focuses on the higher capacity, the more sport end of the motorcycle world. Plus, of course, as you can see from the picture, they've got the scooters out there. They do offer secondhand scooters. And they also offer some products that are at a lower price because they're not constrained in that store by the Yamaha franchise agreement.
So
it's very interesting that they've got the two that kind of two stores very close that clearly work well. What's also interesting in the Liantong store is that they've taken some of the ideas from the whole Derline model. So you can see it's bright, it's clean, it's really attractive for people to walk into. They've got the whole hospitality part going on in there with the seats, the table, the newspaper, water and so on. So people can sit there and be comfortable. So many of the ad from the first store, they've taken to this second store, and the two seem to complement each other really, really well.
That's interesting, and I've seen that a lot, though, in family businesses where they'll open a second store and it'll actually be very nearby. I assume the first building the family owns and lives in.
To be honest, I don't know whether they live upstairs. Of course, that would be very normal if everyone did just walk upstairs at the end of an evening.
Yeah, I think that's pretty normal.
Like
it looks very it has that feeling, and almost all the shops I know, that's the way it is. They own the building. When they expand, they rent another separate one. In case it doesn't work out, it falls through, they can just cancel their contract. But on this second picture you have here for the Liantong store, it's very interesting because I've added some pictures myself, because the show number 3, I often talked about the store I was visiting. Now, mine's not a Yamaha store. It is a family store, almost the exact same story of what you're talking about. It's a Sim store, which is Kimco, a local manufacturer in Taiwan. And what's interesting is they've done a total refurbish of the interior, and it looks a lot like the second picture you have, James.
Isn't that interesting? Yes, I think I'm wondering if the example you got there is a franchise, is it?
Yes, it's a Kimco franchise. And they said they came under pressure from the company that they had to upgrade. And the company does have some matching funds, but you do have to put in most of the expense yourself, you pay for. And the emphasis is on white tile, white plastic siding, white drop ceilings. And they said that the inspectors, when they came to check it out and give them the guidelines, were very, very strict about a couple things. The sign was one thing. And I think your YSP has that too. You know, it has to be set out just in a certain way, include certain information, certain characters and fonts. Their SIM sign, SYM sign, had to be a special way. And then inside the store, it had to have this checkerboard stripe going through it. It had to be just the right height and just the right dimensions. And this, of course, being the racing analogy, had to go through the store. And it's same thing, a lot of glass. They break it out to be a maintenance section, a glass area where they have some new motorcycles, and they give you some DMs, some marketing information, nice comfortable chairs where customers can sit, and they didn't have anything like that before. And it's a complete overhaul of the area, and very similar to what I see in your second picture.
You know, Clyde, that's that whole upgrading of the look is very interesting, because it clearly communicates certain things to customers. What's complementing it is, of course, the service, which gives that real nice warm feeling. And what we see in this example, of course, is that customers are talking a lot about the friendliness, the warmth of the feeling that they get from the whole service personnel, and it becomes a real winning formula. And I'm sure that other stores, like you've mentioned SYM there, they're also attempting to upgrade, put pressure on some of their existing distribution to upgrade the store format, because, of course, a lot of the things that we've seen here focus on format. Now, I'm really excited about this, because I think we've got a whole area that we're going to look at. So I think there's a couple of things that our listeners should look out for. One is the show that we're going to do to follow up on this, which is our research-led show, where we'll talk about how we gathered some of the material and talk a little bit about the practical aspects of trying to connect up with Chinese-based businesses and trying to get some insights from behind the counter. And then the second thing that I'm sure you and I, Clyde, will dig right into is this point that you've just made. Your SYM store is upgraded. Giant, which is this huge firm that makes bicycles, they've gone global. They're a big recognized brand. They're doing the same thing for a lot of their distributors. They're bringing pressure right on them to upgrade their facilities. So I think this is an emerging trend. And listeners, viewers, do look out for it. Of course, we're right here in this space, and we'll be hitting that and bringing that theme right out to you and showing how other businesses like Giant are doing exactly this, upgrading their formats, changing their formats, but also responding right in there to local expectations.
Yeah, I think the really great thing is we can see this as a trend after, you know, 20, 30 years in Taiwan, and this is something that's going to be followed in China. You know, you get down to kind of a saturation in the market, a point where motorcycles are just completely just replacement. You know, nobody's buying one for the first time ever, unless they're buying it for their kids. And so, you know, it's very competitive. And so how do you compete? You're going to go down to the front line where you're meeting the customers. And I love your third picture there with the service delivery steps on the card, James. That's great. Where'd you get this card at?
Well, we got it right from the store. You know, when we were going to collect some information, you want to get the right information, you want to know really what's happening. So we got right in there. We got the store to help us with this kind of information, the information on the card that you can see, as you say, in Exhibit 3. And, well, that's what we're good at, Clyde, isn't it? Getting right down there, getting the real stuff, getting the local stuff, getting the reality of the whole business space. So this is what they do in the store, and they've got their 11 steps there, and it really works out well for delivering good service that customers appreciate.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. And it starts out with smile and say welcome, and ends with say thanks. But they didn't say orient the motorcycle in the correct direction the customer is leaving in, as they did for you. I think you got an extra service there, James.
Well, they didn't charge me anymore, so... Okay. I'm a happy customer.
Okay.
Hey, Clyde, we'll be hooking up again soon for that research show.
Yeah, so, if you're not a member, remember, log in, register. You can see the research shows we have. We have a bunch of them. The next show is going to be another podcast where we talk about some of the details of how James collected this data. If you're a researcher or just interested in that side, please tune in.
Great. We will do. And I should just add, registration is completely free. We don't distribute your details in any way, and it gives you access to a whole lot more resources we've got on the site. See you there.
All right. See you, James. This is Talk of Asian Marketing, with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior. Our website is ccc.qbook.tv, where you can find other audio and video episodes with photos, links, and information related to today's conversation. Subscribe to leave comments and access research episodes with applied topics and research reports.